This is Pure Evil, the sentencing of Aiden Fucci. Immerse yourself in the gripping courtroom audio as justice unfolds in the chilling case of Tristan Bailey's murder. Witness the raw emotion, the powerful testimonies, and the unfiltered truth of Pure Evil, the sentencing of Aiden Fucci.
We are now up to segment number 10 in the sentencing of Aiden Fucci. I'm Tony Bruschi from the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go to the courtroom now and hear what's next to the last segment of his sentencing.
St. Jeff's County Circuit Court, return to order.
You can all be seated, thank you. All right, we're back on the record in case 2021 CF825, State of Florida versus Aiden Fucci. We are ready to go into arguments for our sentencing hearing. Before we do that, I did receive several items from the defense. I just wanted to make sure that they've been provided to the state and that they are going to be part of the record. The first is sentencing memorandum, defense exhibit number one, which is a letter from Aiden Fucci dated March 5th. That's the state in agreement with that. The court can receive that into evidence.
Yes, we receive that.
And sentencing memorandum, defense exhibit number two, letter by Jason Fucci as well.
Yes, the first four, Your Honor, I've given them a paper copy, but the articles from the Milligram articles, all of that would be going in an email, and I don't believe my assistant had sent it.
Okay, well, let me just go through the first four then. Defense exhibit number three, letters by Crystal Smith. You've received those. And then number four, letters by Deborah Spywack. You've received those as well. Okay.
And then number five had previously been provided.
Okay. That is a report by Raul Benasco. Any objection to that?
Okay, Your Honor, I'll follow up and file the report of Dr. Pritchard.
All right.
Over defense objection.
What is the grounds for the defense objection?
It's the same objection that were previously cited for Dr. Pritchard.
All right, well, let's deal with this first then. Is there an objection to Raul Benasco expert witness report being received? He testified. There's also a report that's being offered that the defense is asking the state to consider. All right, is there an objection to that?
No, Your Honor.
All right. And then defense exhibit number six is a Miller, is this the case of the state of Miller versus Alabama, and then a brief for the American Medical Association and the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. Have you received this?
I have not. I would be okay with anything that's case law being filed, but articles and whatnot, I'd have an
objection. All right, let me pass all three of these to you.
So
they're basically the briefs that went with the Miller case.
That were filed in court.
Yes, and one was from the American Medical Association and the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. The other was the brief for the American Psychological Association.
That's fine, Your Honor. If they're the briefs that you could access anyways through that court, that's fine.
Okay. All right. So those have been received, and I will review all those prior to imposing sentence. All right. Any other matters we need to address at this point? From the state?
No.
From the defense?
No, sir.
All right. I'll hear from the state.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to start this afternoon by first just discussing the framework in which Your Honor is to make your decision before sentencing Aiden Fucci in this matter. When you begin with the Florida Rule of Criminal Procedure 3.781C on the sentencing of juveniles in this structure, the rule states that the court shall make, when you come back and pronounce sentence, you shall make specific findings on the record that all relevant factors have been reviewed and considered by the court prior to posing a sentence of life or a term of years equal to life. And then you are to make some findings in writing, and just one specifically as to whether the defendant is eligible for a sentence review hearing under Florida statutes. And that's based on whether the defendant killed, attempted to kill, or intended to kill the victim. So you have to make a specific finding of fact that he killed Tristan Bailey and intended to kill her in this case, which would result in his sentencing review after 25 years. And so that has to be writing. Subsection 2 doesn't apply to him because he doesn't have a prior offense enumerated. And 3 just says that a copy of your written findings about his review hearing, judge, have to be made part of the packet that goes to DOC with him ultimately.
Let me just back you up.
Yep.
Go back to that slide. As far as the court's determination that he killed, attempted to kill, or intended to kill the victim, is that based on the evidence that the court, you're asking the court to make a factual determination from the evidence, or is it also from his guilty plea, and was that stipulated to prior to this hearing?
That wasn't stipulated to me. He did enter a guilty plea. So I obviously think we're in a much different posture than obviously a jury would be making a pure factual finding. But no, you should make your own factual finding. It's why we presented the evidence we did for the record here now, for you to make that finding and for any future record, future court. So you do have to make that specific finding.
All right.
And we believe we provided the evidence for you to do that. And then obviously judge the factors. We've heard this statute number a lot obviously in the last couple days, and we've all been listening and hearing about the factors. And what I want to do now is talk about those and the evidence related to each factor and why that evidence means that the court should, in this case with Aiden Fucci, impose a life sentence. And based on all of these factors, even after reviewing everything, the appropriate sentence for Aiden Fucci is still life. And so when you review these factors, it starts with A, and right at the top, the nature and circumstances of the offense. You know, everybody knows the saying that pictures are worth 1,000 words, and that's very true. Even without the pictures, the testimony of Dr. Fulcher painted a picture of this crime alone. But I know you will never forget those photos. What those photos factually showed, and through Dr. Fulcher's testimony, is that there were 114 stab wounds. 49 of those were defensive. And then you see, and you've heard the other numbers here, 35 or more to her head and neck, 29 throughout the rest of her body. When considering the nature of the crime, what was also important from Dr. Fulcher was to know and learn that she was conscious and alive for this attack. We know that obviously from at least 49 defensive wounds. She was fighting. Another important factor about this particular murder is the high degree of force that was used and would have been necessary to cause these wounds. The amount of wounds, and specifically Dr. Fulcher talked about there's a high degree of force that's needed to penetrate someone's head, make slice marks in her skull, chip out bone in her skull, and ultimately break off the tip of a knife. That takes a high amount of force that this defendant used to carry out this crime, and then the pure number of wounds, Your Honor. And six fatal wounds. And he described that death and what happens when the lungs collapse. And he also went further when you had to view the photos and some of the internal organ photos. There's a purpose for those. He described to you that those injuries you saw in her lungs and the hemorrhage, medical term for the blood pooling, the hemorrhage around those, what that tells him is she was alive and there was a heartbeat throughout that process. And we know she was conscious because she's defending herself. So none of these wounds were post-mortem. That's the nature of the physical crime. The circumstances are even more horrific. And that includes several things, but most importantly, the circumstances that led up to this crime was the defendant's verbalization that he wanted to do it. If he was going to kill somebody, he would plan it. It's what he told Zofie, his most closest friend and girlfriend in his life. He said it would be at night, he would drag somebody in the woods and he would stab them. And he said it would be soon, within a month. He said he would act innocent, keep killing, and then run away. The nature and circumstances, just factually alone, is horrific and some of the worst that this court could probably imagine. And then you put it in context through this group of juveniles that you're supposed to consider, juveniles that commit murder. And who helps you do that? Dr. Gregory Pritchard. And so he is called in to talk about the nature and circumstances of this offense and how does that compare? Because that's what the court's ultimately being asked to do. You're given discretion now. You can't just hand a life sentence out for first-degree murder to a juvenile. You can't. You're asked to weigh 8 factors about the juvenile and to weigh the offense. And so that's the purpose in this type of testimony. And so Dr. Pritchard told this court, that this act was extremely unique and extremely violent for anyone to commit, let alone a juvenile. And I think Dr. Bloomfield today eventually admitted that. Yes, I think anyone would say this is unique. And of course they would. But it's also statistically unique. It's not just a layperson's view at uniqueness, but Dr. Pritchard, with his vast experience in seeing these types of crimes, and that's backed up by the statistics. The U.S. Department of Justice tracks this information, and only 7% of all the juveniles in the U.S. in crime statistics that were arrested were even arrested for violent offenses, and only 1% of those were homicide. So homicide alone with juveniles is unique. And then you look at the type and nature and circumstance of this crime, which is obviously extremely unique and different to other murders that could be committed and are often committed by juveniles. He described it as an outlier and unusual. And when you read Miller v. Alabama and some of the cases that come after that, Horsley v. State with the Florida Supreme Court, they talk about those, that there will be juveniles that will deserve a life sentence. There will be those cases, which is why it's on the table, Your Honor. There will be outliers. There will be incorrigible juveniles that deserve the worst punishment, and Aiden Fucci is one of those. The second factor, Your Honor, is the effect of the crime on the victim's family and on the community. I know it's been made clear to you from yesterday to today, there's no way to measure the effect. Tristan Bailey was a daughter, a granddaughter, a sister, a friend. She was a great friend, it sounds like, to many peers. A good student, a good athlete, a leader on her cheer team. And it sounds like she was a positive influence in her school community, would have been in the world. Someone referred to her and said that, you know, we want to go on and be the light. That's what Tristan was. And so this family has lost something immeasurable. And it's not only the family, and the statutes tell you, you can consider the loss on the community, and you've heard a lot about that, and I'm sure you will and continue to read the letters that came in from local community and beyond, people that were touched by this case one way or the other because they knew the family, knew Tristan, or knew someone affected. And there was over 100 letters submitted outside of this family. This has been an extremely unique case that's touched this community in a unique way. You heard from Mr. Bailey today about the number of vigils, memorials, the support shown through, you know, ribbons and everything the community did, certain businesses that opened up their place for his family and showed support in various ways. This has obviously had an enormous effect on the family and the community, and I think it really goes without saying, and all the evidence is clear on that. One of the other factors that we spent a lot of time on, Judge, along with another one that'll come later, and these really get to who Aiden Fucci is and who was he, trying to understand the juvenile and trying to understand why he committed this particular crime, what led up to, or just really, was this an impetuous crime or is this different? Again, under that framework of all juveniles are immature, a lot of them will take risks. They will make bad decisions, certainly. But is this murder just that, or is this something different? And so this is a factor that helps you with that, Your Honor, and we've already gone over some of this already. We know he was young. You've heard the testimony about maturity as compared to his peer group. I want to comment on intellectual capacity. You heard a lot about that through both psychologist in this case, and I just wanted to point out, and I think Dr. Bloomfield finally conceded this point earlier when he just testified, that there's no evidence of a cognitive deficit, aka an intellectual disability, in Aiden Fucci. You heard the testimony through Dr. Pritchard of how the teachers described it. It was more academic and a lack of motivation. That's completely two different things. And Dr. Bloomfield even had to agree to that point today. He was designated SLD, which means his performance was not up to par where they would expect him to be, and that was based on a learning disability. His last IEP was done right before this homicide. He was on track to earn a standard diploma. And then you heard about the behavioral issues in school, which start to go to this mental and emotional health at the time. And again, we're comparing him to like peers. We're comparing him to juveniles in general. And this juvenile had overall 22 disciplinary referrals. Testimony in the record showed several suspensions. And again, Dr. Pritchard has information and relies on general information about juveniles when saying this is an outlier. Only 5-7% of students, K through 12, in their whole life get suspended one time. And this is obviously a teen who had continuous disciplinary problems, behavioral problems, some of them violent, threatening to throw another student out a window, fighting, disrespect. Dean Wetchin said he definitely didn't like to be disrespected, and he had a huge problem with authority. So that is who Aiden Fucci is at this time. And again, Dean Wetchin commented he's more mature than his peers. He's been in the education system for 35 years. He's clearly comparing him to his peer group. And he said he's mature and he had his problems, but he knew what to do. And what's the point of bringing that up? All of these teachers were asked, and I believe I went through this with Dr. Pritchard, you know, you had all of his eighth grade teachers essentially and the dean interviewed, and they all stated he knew the difference between right and wrong. He knew how to react. Yes, he had a learning disability. We're not talking about that. But he knew and he understood consequences, and he was able to make changes. It's just whether he wanted to or not. And that's the general sense that the teachers and then Dean Wetchin gives about Aiden Fucci. And then you have Mr. Barton from DJJ, obviously another person with experience in talking with juveniles. And he again said he's more mature than others, that Aiden Fucci never complained to him about any abuse in his life or abuse at the jail or being beat up by inmates, guards, or otherwise. And he never said that he was suicidal while he was in the jail. And this was somebody who was visiting him regularly to check on him. And it was the same type of well-being check every time. This would have been someone Aiden Fucci could have talked to had that been something of concern with him. And then the statutes ask you to look at his family and his background. And so, you know, Dr. Pritchard commented, it's someone unremarkable and normal. Well, he's looking at that from, you know, his world and criminal persons that end up in the criminal justice system. And he said it's, quote, normal from the perspective of we often see defendants and juveniles specifically that are committed awful crimes and they suffer from poverty and extreme abuse in their life, sexual abuse, neglect, and all of these things, and that's just absent here. It's absent here, and that is consistent with all the family accounts. The grandmother, Miss Bywack, she describes him growing up in a loving home, mainly with his mom. His parents were separated, and she said Jason Fucci never missed a weekend with his child. Did he discipline him? Sure. Had Aiden told her about that? Oh, Dad's going to discipline me more than Mom. And he had verbalized a few things to Zofie Bauman about that, but outside of that, outside of being disciplined when he misbehaved, there's no reports, no evidence of any sort of unusual, neglectful, abuseful home. He had it all, according to Grandma. He was spoiled. And the brothers felt the same way about being raised in that house. And so then we get to immaturity, impetuosity, which has obviously been a big thing that we've been talking about the last couple days, and failure to appreciate risks and consequences. Dr. Pritchard doesn't attribute immaturity to the commission of this offense, and that's what's important. It's a fact that Aiden Fucci was 14. It's a fact that he's a juvenile and less mature than adults. What matters is, was the crime, was the act a result of an immature, impetuous decision or behavior? And no, the evidence is overwhelming that it is just not in this case. And Dr. Pritchard gave good real-life examples where if he was asked as a psychologist, he would have to say, well, yeah, this is different. And he gave a good example of a juvenile who goes into a store to rob it, carrying a gun to scare people, but never intended to kill. And that clerk does something, makes a movement, does something that causes that juvenile to react in that moment and make an impetuous, stupid, horrible decision and kill that clerk, run out of the store. That is a very, very different crime than what we have here. And I'm sure we can all think of similar acts like that by juveniles. Juvenile makes a out with their friends and people are drinking and they're partying and a juvenile gets on the hood of a car and someone drives them around, that juvenile falls off and gets killed. I mean, these are the examples of risky behavior, impetuous behavior, juveniles not thinking of consequences. And there's dozens more examples like that that can be contrasted with the homicide of Tristan Bailey and what Aiden Fucci did in this case. Dr. Pritchard said there is evidence in this case that although there's the general understanding about these juvenile brain developments, that he can generally understand risk. He's not one of those people who just can't grasp it, that they don't understand. There's a difference. We know it because he told Zofie Bauman that when he killed, he would run away, cover it up, and keep killing. We know from other life events in school, that when he got in trouble or when he felt he was about to get in trouble in a classroom, he would ask to excuse himself and go to Dean Wetchin. He knew, if I do this, I'm going to get in trouble, I'm going to leave, and I'm going to go vent to Dean Wetchin. So Aiden Fucci understands consequences. Generally, it's clear, as well as any other juvenile. And then after the murder, Dr. Pritchard attributed his actions into whether this was an impetuous offense by talking about what he did after. No, he knew what consequences were because he immediately hid a murder weapon so he wouldn't be caught with it on his way home. He went right up into his room, as evidenced by that video. He hid the shoes and white shirt behind his dresser. He immediately went in a shower, spent a decent amount of time in that shower washing evidence off his body. He snuck through that house quietly so nobody would find him or hear him coming home. He did things. He knew he had just done something wrong, and he was trying to cover it up. And then he lies. This isn't impetuous behavior. Your Honor, we know that he was the sole participant in this homicide. It's overwhelming, but it explains why we put forth some of the evidence we did, obviously the premeditated statements. The other reason we, large in part, introduced all the video surveillance was just to prove that he is the only person who was walking with Tristan Bailey. He's the only person. He did this alone, and then we know all of the evidence related to this homicide ended up in his bedroom and in a pond nearby. There's no evidence of any pressure on Mr. Fucci to commit this crime by anybody else. One of the other factors, Judge, is criminal history. He has none. And then the effect of his youth on his judgment. And some of these factors, Judge, overlap, but essentially Dr. Pritchard and Dr. Bloomfield agree. You know, youth affects judgment. Yes, we talked about that. That's the lens to look at him through. But what did Dr. Pritchard say about Aiden Fucci? He has personal dynamics, personal features that make him unusual and dangerous. Dr. Pritchard testified that he has clinical concerns that something is seriously wrong with Aiden Fucci and in a bad way. It goes beyond poor judgment. It goes beyond youth with this individual and this crime. He, obviously, that's why he made such a point of the unusual preoccupation with death and killing. That's not youth and poor decision making. Again, it's a preoccupation with death, and unfortunately here he carried that out. And then finally, Judge, the possibility of rehabilitating the defendant. And this is a factor to consider in sentencing him, and when you review some of the case law on these post-Milligram sentencings, this is a factor. It's not as weighty as it is in resentencing juveniles 25 years from now. Things sort of flip when they get reviewed. A lot of emphasis is put on rehabilitation, but it is something for the court to consider now based on the information we would have to this point. And so that's all the doctors could speak to. Dr. Pritchard told you that he believes there's a poor prognosis based on what he's seen thus far. And that's all he can say. And he told you why he felt that. He told you, you know, that behavior right after the homicide, his actions in the back of the patrol car and laughing, just the callous behavior that he exhibited when he was the only person in the world who knew where Tristan was and that she was laying in the woods dead from his actions. His demeanor in the interview room, just showing he's calm. He's asking his parents, what does this have to do with me? Why am I here? Not even looking. No, it told his parents he wasn't scared. Not really. And then, of course, his behavior in the jail and all of the extortion and threats to guards and other inmates. So not just the fact that a juvenile inmate gets in a fight. Of course, those things happen. But what Dr. Pritchard found unique and concerning about Aiden Fucci is that he would brag about his crime, the specifics of his crime, in a way to boast him up and get what he wanted. So I don't shoot my victims. I stab them face to face. You know, using his actual crime to manipulate, fight, scare others, exert dominance is different than just juveniles getting in fights in jail. And so he's done nothing to this point to exhibit any sort of desire, care, remorse to change anything about his future behavior. And so, Your Honor, just going back to what we were talking about in the beginning, the framework, and this is just the statute number, 775.082.1b1 is where it states that when you make the finding that Aiden Fucci was the one who actually killed and intended to kill Tristan Bailey, he will be entitled to a review hearing in accordance to the statute. And that statute says that he is entitled to review after 25 years. So we've already gone over some of this stuff. You have to make it in writing. He admitted it again, and all of the evidence we've supported and put forward in this case supports that. Your Honor, the decision that you have before you is one of discretion. And like I said earlier, if Aiden Fucci was an adult, there would be no discretion, there would be no conversation. It wouldn't have mattered if he walked in a store and shot a clerk once, or he did what he did to Tristan Bailey, it would be a life sentence. But because of everything that's happened through our courts and the medically and psychologically accepted science, that gives you discretion. And the state of Florida has laid out those factors, and it now requires you to look. It's stating a fact, and we're legally accepting a fact, and you have to look through that lens and make an individual decision about Aiden Fucci. And so that's why the look that Dr. Pritchard did in this case, not just coming to educate you about the juvenile brain, we understand that, but to actually dig in and look at the evidence and try to apply it and then compare it across his peer group and draw differences and come to a conclusion, is he unique, is he an outlier, and does he deserve the harshest punishment out there? And that's why they tell you to do an individualized sentencing. And all the evidence that we brought you, and especially through Dr. Pritchard, should help you do that. And all that evidence has really shown us who Aiden Fucci is. And we all know that juveniles confide more. It's common sense. Juveniles confide more in their friends and their peers than they're going to confide in parents and teachers sometimes. And he did that. Aiden Fucci told his closest friends and his girlfriend his most innermost thoughts and desires. And he told them that real life violence was his interest. He wanted to know. He wanted to kill someone and do it by stabbing them, which is clearly different than shooting someone, and it causes much suffering. He knew how, and he knew when he was going to do it. How he was going to do it is he was going to take someone in the woods, just like that, and he was going to kill him. He was going to stab them until they die. That's what we knew. We knew he knew how. We knew that he knew when, that it would be soon. And unfortunately, Judge, his when ended up being May 9th of 2021. And his who ended up being Tristan Bailey. And for all of the evidence that we presented in this case, all of the factors, and showing you how those factors show you who Aiden Fucci is, the uniqueness of this crime, all of that shows you that this particular juvenile should be sentenced to the harshest penalty possible, which is life in prison, and he will be entitled to a 25-year review, and he will have a chance to attempt to rehabilitate himself and prove himself at that time. Thank you.
Thank you. defense.
Good afternoon. When a kind and a this kind of crime visits a family, every word the defense has to say, every motion, every argument can only seem like minimization of the pain to the family and the survivors. But we can't go backwards in time. We can't undo the action. The only thing that we can do today is answer the question of a sentence. And that's whether Aiden would be sentenced to life in prison with a review in 25 years or 40 years with a review in 25 years. And with that in mind, it's what I'm going to do is walk the court through what the court knows already, and that's statute 921.1401. So looking at that first prong, the circumstance of the crime, of the offense. 14 years old, 114 stab wounds. Those are numbers. They're not insignificant, but they're numbers. A child is now before the court for the life that he took of another child. Horrific, heinous, horrible, are just some of the words that have floated around regarding this offense. But we still have to look at the circumstances. The state had presented, or had put in the court file, a photo of the scene, of the neighborhood, and the many lakes or retention ponds in the neighborhood, the many homes and residences in the neighborhood. And what did Aiden do before and after? There's the walking past all those ring cameras, the running back with the bloody shoes before those ring cameras, all the different retention ponds that he could have thrown the knife, the clothes, the shoes. No. Threw the knife right there in the closest retention pond and took the shoes back home with him. And then the location matters. It's a spot that the kids had gone to before and visited in the past. A spot that wasn't covered. In terms of there's a lot of vegetation there, a lot of palm fronds. There's no effort to hide the body in terms of covering it or burying it. There was no effort to conceal the decedent in terms of removing hands, removing head. All the things that could have been done to disfigure and hide the identity was not taken by Aiden Fucci. Was the crime heinous? Yes. Was that a terrible act? Terrible doesn't begin to describe it. But there are other things that he could have done to cover up this offense that he didn't take. 921-1401-2B. The effect on the family and the community. And to this, there's no question. None. Fundraisers, vigils, letters. The court heard from the family and the community this morning. And Aiden's family. His grandmother, who tearfully expressed the loss to her family and prayers that she and the rest of the family have for the Baileys. But Your Honor, I have to quote Francis Bacon and observe of revenge. Revenge is a kind of wild justice which the more man's nature runs to, the more ought the law to weed out. And looking to the effect of this on the family and the community, revenge and the calls for it are not appropriate. We use the law and we look to the law in how to sentence Aiden Fucci, whether 25 review after a 40-year sentence or a 25-year review and a life sentence. So subsection C, and there's been a lot of testimony on this regarding the defendant's age, maturity, intellectual capacity. He's 14. Now today he's 16 before the court, but at the time of this offense he was 14. And some say he's mature. And Dr. Bloomfield rightly pointed out by what measure. Who do you compare him to? How do you measure maturity? Your Honor saw the video clip of him in the back seat of the vehicle throwing up a peace sign. That's not maturity. To his mental health, there can be no question it's an issue. Telling friends that he hears voices, telling the DJJ officer Barton that he hears voices, and the antipsychotic drugs that he is on, lithium, Remeron, Cyprexa. Yes, he has issues. But the focus is his age, his maturity at the time of the offense. He was not mentally well. He was not mature for his age. The actions of Aiden and his friends and the risky behavior that these children were involved in points to immaturity. A 14-year-old isn't a late adolescent, but an early adolescent, Your Honor. And you've heard both Pritchard and Bloomfield in agreement about the brain science, that a child that age doesn't have a fully formed brain, that the part of the brain that's involved with risk assessment, the prefrontal cortex, is the last part of the brain to develop. And why is that important? Children do not make sound decisions. Reasoned decisions or wise decisions. nothing in this offense points to maturity or assessment of the risk, despite what the state would argue to the court. But he will mature, and the brain will form. It's the same with that prefrontal cortex. We're already seeing forms of maturity in Aiden. February 6th, he apologized. That was the first chance that he had that the defense team would allow for him to say something in open court. And members of the family don't accept it. And what apology could he present that would be acceptable? It's understandable why they don't accept the apology, Your Honor. But the child who highest grade level completed is seventh grade, arrested in the eighth grade, not reading at grade level, presented in his own words the best he could. So Dr. Pritchard had much to say about Aiden. And yes, Dr. Bloomfield was contesting certain portions of it. Interesting though still that both of them are in agreement on brain development and that these issues aren't in debate. Whether it's psychology or psychiatry or social workers or even pediatricians, that they're all in agreement about children and their brain development and their ability to think through and assess the risk. And I come back to risk while we're talking about this section of the statute of mental health, because the risky behavior that we saw Aiden participate that night was carried through. It didn't start and end with Tristan's death. There's risky behavior in his out of the home after midnight, which his mother didn't know about. The risky behavior was going to a friend's house and smoking marijuana. The risky behavior continued and continued and continued because he's a child. But Dr. Pritchard argued, or it's stated, I should say, before the court, that he's mature. But that's not what the evidence is showing. Dr. Pritchard relied on the collateral information in terms of the other children. The other children who had their own problems of anxiety and depression and their own risky behavior. Dr. Pritchard said that his actions were premeditated based on the conversation with the girlfriend and that it wasn't impetuous. Tossing the knife into the pond, he didn't think was impetuous. But it was. The pond was right there. Some forethought, he could have taken all of the incriminating evidence and placed it somewhere else, but most of it he brought to his home. And Dr. Pritchard said that he lacked remorse, and on this, above all, I have to disagree. Because Aiden has expressed remorse. The court has the letter. Again, it is not the most articulate letter, but it's his words and his writing. And he did that this year at 16 as his best expression of an apology, which over time will improve. As he matures, as he grows older, he'll be in a position to better express himself. And then Dr. Pritchard said that he had a poor prognosis for rehabilitation, but I'll come back to that one. So turning to subsection D, family background. Now, Aiden comes from a fairly large family. He, from his mother's side, is the middle child. He's one of five. On his father's side is a large number of children there too. So as the middle child, his grandmother described him as silly, happy, fun, and respectful. This is the kid that she would gather with the other children in the summers, take to church, have outings, go fishing. Aiden's family loves him, and they care for him, and they don't understand what happened. Both of his parents have provided letters. But what was his daily life like? And there's conflict. We hear from the same girlfriend that he was neglected emotionally, that his father is physically abusive. And then there's the constant movement. Every Tuesday and Thursday and every other weekend, he was in a different house. And it's born out of love. They loved him and they wanted to spend time with him, so that's why there's so much movement. But a child needs consistency. And he didn't have that with the constant movement between the two different homes. Part of the reason why he's late for school is because of the distances that he had to travel to get to school on time. And it's not a complaint. It's just pointing it out that his background and the complexity of it. But within that background is mental illness. So his grandmother also testified about his uncle. And the uncle at 14, the same age that Aiden was at the time of this crime, was Baker-acted and struggles with depression. That his grandfather had some mental illness issues that were so great that she separated the children, his mother and uncle, from the grandfather. So there is a family history of mental illness. And Your Honor, I point these out because it's within the statute. I'm not pointing these out as excuses. Aiden has entered a guilty plea. So turning to subsection F, Aiden stood alone and entered that guilty plea. And the apology. § 921(1401), subsection G. Peer pressure, familiar pressure, we know that he was, again, with the children and the risky behavior. We know that there was drug use that night. That he had it is reported that he had smoked marijuana that evening before walking down or walking off with Tristan. So 921(1401)(2H), that there's no criminal history. And there is none. He has no prior arrests, no prior contact with law enforcement, and the minor infractions in the school were resolved with detention or some sort of in-school discipline. But never inside that school setting was it an issue of a red flag, is how they were described. Issues where law enforcement is contacted and arrest is made. Any issues that they had with Aiden never rose to criminal conduct or an arrest. But in candor, yes, there's illicit drug use, and there are allegations of drinking, not in school, but underage drinking, that are part of who Aiden Fucci is and was. Subsection I is the effect, if any, of characteristics attributable to the use, to defendant's youth or judgment. So here we have a demonstrated lack of judgment that can be completely attributable to his age of 14, a child in middle school who's struggling academically. And his actions are a full demonstration of a lack of judgment in his actions with his peers and the results of his actions. It matters that we're dealing with a 14-year-old, Your Honor. And what do we do with a 14-year-old? He's been direct filed, and he's been brought before the court with these adult charges on an indictment. But the court still has the opportunity to consider his age and give him a term of years. And it does make a difference in terms of the life sentence versus 40 years, because the court has heard from Raul Benasco in terms of what the Florida Department of Corrections and the resources available and the targeting of those resources to inmates that actually have a release date. At 14, he goes to the Department of Corrections without completing the eighth grade, again, with a reading level and academic level that was scoring below eighth grade. No skills, no skill set. All of those that he would have to learn in prison. With a term of years, he'd actually be in a position where they could place him into one of those programs. He loves working with cars like his father. And that opportunity to learn a skill so that when he reaches his 25-year review, he would actually have an opportunity to present himself as a skilled or some sort of skilled trade would be another reason why to give him a term of years versus a life sentence. But then there's the other half. It's not just that he has no working skills at this point. If he's given that opportunity of a term of years, he can receive programs for rehabilitation. And this is a child that does listen to authority and respond well, because we saw that in his interactions with Dean Wetjen and Officer Beasley. So this statute does not bind the court. The court can, it is a non-exhaustive list. So there are factors that the court can consider, whether it's his grandmother's discussing his faith or his good behavior in court, or that he's loved by his family and that he loves his family. His little sister who longs to figure out what's going on with him and where he is, shows that he is able and capable of forming loving relationships, that he's able and capable to care for others. The court can look out and not see his father and not see his mother on his request that they don't appear, because he is well aware of all the negative press and harm that his actions have had on his family, on his father's employment, that even his mother and his mother's family had to move, and he didn't want any further harm should they even come to court. The court can consider that he had a diagnosis that was not followed up of ADHD, that the schools that did a phenomenal job weren't in a position to provide him with intellectual testing, to provide him with counseling and therapy that he desperately needed. And how do we know that he desperately needed therapy? Because at 14, his recreational time was spent smoking marijuana and drinking alcohol with friends. And that he started before this offense. That within the school and the school records, it's identified that there were behavioral issues, and yet no therapy was provided specific to that. So Aiden is presenting as disabled. And the full depth of it, we don't know. It's based on the records. We know that he had issues with auditory and speech that were not fully developed or fully examined in the school, and that he had a language-based learning disability. And that the school psychologist that was within the IEP wasn't a psychologist in the sense of a trained professional. And I don't mean in the sense of 40 years like Dr. Pritchard, or in excess of 40 years like Dr. Bloomfield. She had a bachelor's degree, not a master's or a doctorate. Perhaps had she had one, she would have recommended the testing that Aiden didn't receive in the schools. That wasn't followed up on as suggested by his pediatrician. So, Your Honor, turning to 921.1401, subsection J. He's 14 and he's presumed to have a potential for rehabilitation. And I do understand that Dr. Pritchard thinks not, but he does. We have the example that has been testified to by Dean Wetchen, that in the school setting, given an opportunity for the mentoring between Dean Wetchen and Officer Beasley that demanded respect as the officer and the dean, that Aiden responded well. That given an opportunity to express himself or deal with behavioral issues by going to them, he did that. And there was a noticeable difference in terms of the disciplinary issues that they had at the school. In Department of Corrections, can he be rehabilitated? Yes. And the best way for that to happen would be with a term of years. With a term of years, you'd have access to programs for counseling, for mentorship, and for skills. Again, he's going in with nothing. Absolutely nothing. He doesn't know how to fix a car. He doesn't know how to do anything electrical. He has no skill sets. So given that ability to get the term of years and get into one of those programs that would allow him to improve would be a benefit. Not just to Aiden, but to everyone. So what is the court to do with Aiden Fucci? Would sentencing him to 40 years diminish or take away from the 114 stab wounds? And I submit no. 40 years is not a light sentence. It is not an easy sentence. It is a 40-year sentence that this child will be placed in the Department of Corrections with grown men who have experience in the Department of Corrections. And Raul Bonasco had described the need to keep children separated and protected. But that protection only lasts for about a year. Nothing moving forward for Aiden Fucci will be easy, and it shouldn't be. But the 40-year sentence doesn't make light of what happened on Mother's Day in 2021. It still is punishment that every day that he's in custody, away from his friends, away from his family, is punishment. Every day being told where to go, what to do, and when to do it is punishment. Your Honor, we are talking about a prison sentence for a child and asking for 40 years as punishment. For a child that came before the court and pled guilty. Not to a lesser, but pled guilty as charged. The family this morning referred to him as less than human and not human. The court cannot do that. That is not a factor under 921-1401. But the court can punish Aiden Fucci with a prison sentence of 40 years. And that's what we're asking, Your Honor. We're not asking for a release, but the child that is before the court today, that is loved by his family, we're asking for a 40-year sentence with a 25-year review. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Are there any other matters that we need to address before we recess? Mr. Fucci, you've now heard the arguments of your counsel. There was also, as you saw, a lot of photographs that were being shown during the course of her argument. Were those the photographs that you were requesting that the court review when we spoke last?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And you're going to provide me a copy of those, counsel?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Now, having heard your counsel's argument, once again, Mr. Fucci, is there anything else that you wanted your attorneys to present or argue on your behalf during the sentencing hearing that they have not done so, that they have not already done?
No, sir.
And up until this point, are you satisfied with your attorney's representation of you?
Yes, sir.
Very good. All right, we will be in recess. I do have a couple of fairly quick matters on Friday that I will take up first, so we'll probably get started on this at about 9:15, perhaps 9:30, but I will start court at 9 a.m. I don't anticipate those other matters taking more than 15 minutes. If the attorneys could be here by 9 o'clock, and then we'll get started as soon as possible. All right, there we are. Recess.
That wraps up segment number 10 of the sentencing of Aidan Fucci. There is much more to come in segment number 11, including a very dramatic reading from the judge with his thoughts and raw feelings about the horrendous crime of pure evil that took place. That's coming up next. Press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss it. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.